Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Catherine Connolly, you're very welcome to The Last Word. Thank you very much for joining us.
You're mean my good, Matt.
Just a few days to go now before the people decide to cast their votes. One of the things that you've been saying on the campaign trail is about how you would represent the values of the Irish people. What are those values?
Yeah, well, more and more they're becoming more visible to me and more focused. The values of compassion, care, the value of a voice for peace in the world and the community spirit on the ground. Over and over. I've been on the road since July, the third week of July. I don't think I've missed a day. And I still haven't the country covered. I hope to have it covered by Thursday. And over, people are coming up to me and they hope is the message that I've given them hope. They see this country as normalising genocide in the past, normalising a housing crisis, over 16,000 homeless, and they're not happy with that.
How do you think Ireland is normalising genocide?
No, they see the normalisation.
Well, they see it, but that's not something that we in Ireland have anything to do with.
Well, absolutely, the government have certainly improved as the time went on, but they would be of the opinion that they were late in speaking out, and they want Ireland to show leadership as a sovereign, independent republic, a neutral state. And that has come up over and over. They want to build on our experience as a sovereign, independent republic.
How much influence do you think do we really have, though? How seriously is our voice taken? Because even last week, when you would have had a peace deal of sorts, we see how well it actually holds, negotiated in the Middle East, Donald Trump holds a conference afterwards in Egypt. There was no sign of any Irish leaders at it. All the things that Ireland has done supporting Palestine in recent times, our activists going on flotillas, does that actually matter a jot to what actually happens?
I think it matters an awful lot. And obviously we're in the hands of Trump at the moment, President Trump, in relation to this, in relation to the peace deal. We have to use our voice. We've used it repeatedly over the years. We have peacekeeping forces going abroad since 1958, uninterrupted. We have gained a reputation and a credibility way beyond our population. People trust our peacekeeping forces, and they're in Lebanon at the moment for another year. Unfortunately, because of the American veto on this occasion, they won't be able to continue there. And I think we need to build on that. Our defence forces have just really done us tremendous honour across the country. And because we're a neutral state, because we're a post-colonial state, because of our history of the famine, and because of Northern Ireland, the ending of the conflict in the north, and the methodical, meticulous work that took and is still taking to ensure that we have peace. I think as a small country with just over 5 million in our population, we can be a voice for peace in the world and trust.
But given that the Good Friday Agreement and subsequent political developments were largely the work of what you would call the establishment political parties, would you give credit to the likes of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael?
I give credit all the time where it's deserved, and absolutely. I also give credit to the civic organisations on the ground in the north and the women's group, the Women's Coalition. And they did tremendous work and were very much involved in the lead up to the Good Friday Agreement. Since then, there's work ongoing as well. I actually looked at, just over the last few days again, the cross-party report from cross-party in relation to the Good Friday Agreement and complying with it and enforcing it. And what jumps out again are the women's voices in that report. And they recommended, there were a good few recommendations. One of them was for the government to publish a green paper on the way forward. That hasn't been done, unfortunately. So yes, we have made progress. And yes, it's marvellous that we have the Good Friday Agreement and all the cross-border infrastructure that was set up and the cooperation. Absolutely marvellous. But we need a lot more.
If Donald Trump was in the room now, what would you say to him? And would you say it then differently as president?
No, I've been asked this very often. And I've... If President Trump is invited to this country and that's a decision for the government, I'll respect that decision, as I would any other invitation. I did that as Laskan Korla for over 4.5 years, approximately 4.5 years. I met delegations. I met the former president of America, Joe Biden. I met the head of the commission, Frau van der Leyen. So I've never had a problem in different roles and fulfilling...
But what would you say to them? And would you feel empowered by the position of president to speak your mind? Or would you feel inhibited by the role of the office?
I think the role of president is an absolute privilege, and it's to reflect the people of Ireland and to reflect them nationally and internationally. I don't think I'll have a difficulty doing that, and it will absolutely depend on the circumstances. Any president that comes, of course I'll have to welcome the president or any other visitor.
But would you then feel that you'd have to bite your tongue, that you might want to say things, for example, to Donald Trump about his behaviour in relation to Israel and Palestine, his behaviour in relation to Russia and Ukraine? Would you be elected, perhaps, on a perception that you would have strong views about that, but then find yourself in a position as being president where you couldn't say what you really think?
I don't think I'm being elected on the back of having strong views. I think I'm being elected on my track record as an outspoken TD in the Dáil, but also as Laskan Korla, who was able to bridge all sides and listen to all opinions in the Dáil, as a barrister, as a clinical psychologist, as a teacher, and many other jobs that I've had in my life. I think I've a proven track record of being a rational, reasonable woman, a pragmatic woman.
So you'd be careful.
Also a woman with vision. You know, so I will embrace the role, and I will do it as professionally and to the best of my ability as possible.
Because you mentioned there about the impact that Ireland has, the outsized impact. Do you think Michael D. Higgins as president has had any real impact? Because he has made speeches. He made a major speech in Strasbourg about the European Union in 2013, for example, which raised a lot of eyebrows at the time. He has made speeches about lack of housing in Ireland. And nothing has changed. Is the president's voice impotent, really, no matter what the president says?
I don't think so. But I think housing and all the other issues that we have are a matter of policy. They're a matter for government and opposition in the Dáil. The role of president is completely different. And I think Michael D has given people hope when he has spoken out on different occasions. And in fact, Matt, that's the feedback coming back to me from people on the ground. And you know, it's been said about this campaign that it's dull. I've never had a dull moment in this campaign. Not a dull moment. And I've been out approximately 3 months solid with people coming up, engaging, expressing different opinions to me, wanting to be heard, upset over lack of services, upset over housing. Absolutely, over and over these issues. In a family resource centre lately in Trim, the manager gave us a tour and gave us an overall view of the services. Fantastic service. In that family resource centre, they have a food bank. And she pointed out that 3 to 4 days, some people come in not having eaten any food, saving the food for their children or saving the money for fuel. Now, that was one family resource centre. I've been in many. And that was one of the issues that she highlighted. So all of those issues keep coming up.
They do, didn't President Michael D. Higgins highlight so many of those things over his 14 years? You're seen by many as a natural successor, previously a member of the Labour Party before you came independent, a colleague of his in Galway's, that there's almost a natural progression. But would you worry that you might have to do things differently to have some effect, because that perhaps, for all of the hopes that President Michael D. Higgins may have given people, it had little practical outcome?
I don't agree with you. I think hope is very important. And as I go around the country, young people in particular, but of all ages, are looking for hope. They're looking to hear their views, to have someone to hear their views and to reflect and to listen. So I think you can make a huge difference symbolically and also on a practical level as president. My whole campaign has been as a symbol of a movement. I made a decision to stand, not based on money, not based on the fact that I had access to €500,000 to run the campaign, or indeed on the backing of different parties. I made the decision in the way that I made a decision to stand as Las Ciancorla, because there was nobody going to stand in that election, which was a secret ballot, and we were going to hand the position, Las Ciancorla, to the government without any attempt at opposition or any attempt at putting forward a woman or a man. It didn't matter to me. If somebody else had stood, I would have happily backed them. But nobody did, and I made the decision to stand because I felt we couldn't keep sort of giving out about a government and then hand a position like that over without standing up and say there's a competent person here. So I stood. I made my decision to stand as a presidential candidate in the exact same manner. It was time for me to stand up. It was time to give people a choice.
You're campaigning as an independent candidate, but if you are to be elected, how can you be an independent president when the Constitution clearly and carefully sets out the parameters of what you can and can't do?
They're not mutually exclusive. I'm an independent candidate, so I'm not in any party, and I'm absolutely delighted the number of parties that are supporting me, and none. And I think it is really testimony that I'm an inclusive candidate. I appealed to different views. I tend to have a lens that guides me of what's right and wrong, actually. And for me, it's just wrong to have 16,000 plus people homeless. That is just simply wrong.
But is there anything as president that you could do about that? Is this a presidential campaigning issue?
Yeah. They're the issues of serious concern to the people of Ireland at the moment. And obviously, what I'm saying, that's for the government to decide. But this is a movement. People have come together. It's incredible. I think we have over 15,000 volunteers when we checked last. I'm inclined to underestimate, but I think it's approximately 15,000 people have signed up. And they want a different type of republic. They don't want to see as inevitable that we've over 16,000 homeless or obscene numbers on waiting lists. And so this movement will continue after me. And I'm delighted that I have united people together across parties and none to stand together.
How representative, though, is that of the overall population? And the reason I ask that is that in last week's opinion poll in the Irish Times, which has you clearly ahead of Heather Humphreys and some people saying it's inevitable that you will become president this Friday, yet about 49% of those surveyed said that they didn't feel represented by the candidates on the ballot paper at all. So what can you do for those people who don't feel represented?
Well, I've done my best all my life to listen to all sides. Indeed, in Limerick lately, I was interrupted by a member of the Burke family who interrupted, and I shook hands with him. I asked him to just maybe stop shouting and I would listen to him afterwards, but he didn't. I have no difficulty listening to people who have different ideas. I come from a family of 14. We all had different ideas and different roles I've played. I've no difficulty at all. And actually, if you take from the North and the Good Friday Agreement and so on, lately I met with Senator Francis Black and two other members from a civic engagement group. And what they've been working together a good few years now, with a huge number of meetings all over the country, both in the North and South, and online and in person. And what over an hour, and looking at the various documents they gave me, what's very obvious is we have a lot more in common than we have differences. So I would focus in on actually our similarities in this country and in the North, and also cherish the differences. I think we have to learn that diversity is an absolute advantage.
Well, indeed, but I'm still coming back to the 49% who feel they were not represented by the candidates who've been on the ballot paper. Would it have been better if Maria Steen or others had been added to the ballot paper if we'd had a wider debate about what the characteristics of being Irish are?
Well, perhaps, but I mean, the nomination process is there. I declared in July, and at the time I I was received criticism that I was got off the block too early and it wouldn't be good. But I made a very conscious decision to do that. Other candidates could have done that, and if seeking the support of four local authorities. You can't just decide a few weeks beforehand. Everybody knows how the local authority system works. So it was open for any candidate to stand or to get 20 nominations.
We'll take a break. We'll be back with more with Catherine Connolly, independent candidate for the presidency, after this quick break.
The Last Word
with Matt Cooper
on Today FM.
Catherine Connolly is with us for our presidential interview. If you were to win on Friday, one of the things that will happen, I think, quite early in your time as president is you will be required to sign into law an Act of the Oireachtas introducing occupied territories legislation. That looks almost certain that it will happen, but it might not include services. It might be limited to goods. In that event, what would you do?
I'll do what I will do with every piece of legislation. I'll scrutinise it. I'll take advice from the Council of State, and I'll decide if it's in compliance with the Constitution. If it is, it'll be signed into law. If not, and I'll make a decision whether to refer it to the Supreme Court or not.
That's exactly as you should do, but would that stick in the craw a little bit? Would you find that very difficult to do, given that what you've expressed earlier in relation to Palestine, that, and given that you have been quite open about wanting services as well as goods included?
Absolutely. I never use terms like stick in the craw or bite your lip or bite your tongue. It's a democracy, and we have a government and we have an opposition, and they have a job to do. And I have very strong opinions as a TD. And should I remain in the Dáil, I will be fighting tooth and nail for services in that bill. In fact, I understood that was going to happen. It seemed very positive from the Taoiseach that that was going to happen.
Not so much so from the Taoiseach these days.
That's right. But it did seem as if it was going to happen. It hasn't. And I've made it clear as often as I can that as president, I have a role not to judge the legislation, not to second guess the legislation, because the Parliament is, this is a democracy, it'll be passed by the Dáil, and it's then up, the role of the presidency is, as I said.
Would it not be neutering an awful lot of what you are to do that? Is that not going to be an extremely difficult thing for you to do as a person of principle, to suddenly decide that, okay, I'm just going to have to suck it up and go ahead with something that I do not believe in?
And it's not about sucking up, it's about an ultimate respect for democracy and a respect for the Dáil, the Seanad, and the role of presidency. And I have no difficulty with that. Democracy is all we have, and we have to make it work. However, I believe that the people of Ireland and the who have come behind me, it's a movement. It's a movement for people to realise they have the power, and I have the greatest respect for that. And let them influence, and let us. They will work together in relation to the Occupied Territories Bill. And the government will have to account for why they're not including services. It's a very basic act, legislation proposed, very, very basic.
Well then, what about the triple lock? Because you mentioned earlier about the role of Irish armed forces in servicing peace in places like Lebanon, and how that's coming to an end because of America. What logic is there in allowing our involvement, that we would want to decide for ourselves about taking part in peacekeeping movements, effectively been vetoed by the UN Security Council, with the likes of Russia, China, even the United States, given what you're saying, essentially having a power of veto over what we decide to do? Why surrender our sovereignty like that?
You see, that frame debate has only occurred in the last few years. Prior to that, we were very proud of our peacekeeping forces abroad under a UN mandate. And it's of concern to me as a TD that the debate is being funneled into that, taking back our sovereignty. We haven't given away our sovereignty. We're an independent republic. And the UN was set up to make sure there were no more wars. In fact, the day we go to cast our vote on Friday is the 80th anniversary of the UN Charter. It is the 80th anniversary, which was the start of a recognition that we needed UN infrastructures to make sure that we wouldn't go down the road of more slaughter and more wars. And now more than ever, we need a voice for peace. And Ireland can be that voice for peace.
But our peacekeepers are needed in locations as well. Why allow the likes of Russia, China, the United States to decide that we can't offer our services in those locations?
You see, I think there's a basic lack, a misunderstanding in relation to this. Peacekeeping forces go abroad to keep the peace under a UN mandate because both sides accept the peacekeepers. So let's go fast forward a year's time when the UNIFIL mission comes to an end. Will we send out our peacekeeping forces without a UN mandate? How will that work? Who will decide? How will they keep the peace if the other side are not agreeing that there should be peacekeeping forces there? It's based on consent, Matt. It's based on consent that the two opposing sides agree to have peacekeeping forces there. So when the government discusses this and highlights the problem with the veto, which I share, five members have a veto, we need reform of the UN. And what the government is not telling us, what will they replace it with? How will we ensure our peacekeeping forces keep peace and are not slaughtered? If you don't have a UN mandate, you don't have agreement. And we have no discussion on that.
There's two things I want to just clarify, which is, as we haven't had the opportunity to speak to you during the length of this campaign previously. And just a couple of things I'm just interested in that I'd like clarification on. For example, the controversy about Ursula Nishanon, who was hired by you to work in the Houses of the Oireachtas after she had been released on licence from prison. I don't think she'd completed her full sentence of the 6 years.
She was of good behaviour, so she was released early.
Okay. Airgi has claimed she was still active in the organisation after her release. What conversation did you have with her about her rehabilitation? What conversation did you have with her about the circumstances of her arrest and conviction, about that issue, the video where she was seen mimicking the beheading of Queen Elizabeth? What did she tell you that convinced you that she had forsaken all of that and was rehabilitated?
Well, first of all, Airgi is a registered political party. Secondly, this story emerged from unnamed resources making allegations. Actually, firstly, let me preface this by saying that woman's photo was on the front of a paper yesterday, and it's absolutely appalling and unacceptable to me.
Why?
For privacy, because it's an absolute infringement on her privacy over and over, with the base intent of trying to damage me as a presidential candidate.
Are these not legitimate questions to ask? And the question I asked you is what conversation you had with her?
Absolutely. I'm going to answer all your questions, Matt. But again, why would somebody's privacy be trampled upon? These are serious questions. So the story started from unnamed resources alleging that I had interfered with the process, that I had contacted the guards, that I had appealed, none of which were accurate. So I had to deal with each of those, which were released bit by bit with different questions. And so then we have a woman who has completed her prison term, a model prisoner who's let out beforehand, an absolute example of rehabilitation working and the prison system working.
How do you know that? What conversation did you have with her that convinced you of that?
I accepted what happened in the Special Criminal Court. She received a sentence and she was...
Having pleaded not guilty?
Absolutely, but she offered no defence. And she served her term, was released. It goes to the heart of what we mean by rehabilitation. I discussed it with Eamon O'Queeve, who from day one allowed me to use his name. And he has done tremendous work in the prisons, both north and south. And he absolutely vouched for this woman. Absolutely. And I've been proven absolutely right.
What discussion did you have with her?
The discussions were for the court. The discussions for me was her rehabilitation.
Did you not discuss with her what she had done and whether her views had changed?
It was obvious her views had changed.
How was it obvious?
It was very obvious from talking to Eamon O'Queeve, who had visited her.
But what about you talking to her, rather than just depending on what Eamon O'Queeve told you?
It's not a question of depending on anyone else. It's a question of the person had completed her term, fully rehabilitated. Eamon O'Queeve had visited her more than once, as he did both the north and south, with different prisoners, and it goes to the heart. So here we...
Sorry, before you brought her into the Houses of the Oireachtas, did you have a conversation with her talking about all of these things to form your own judgment that she was rehabilitated?
I formed my own opinion from talking to people who knew her.
But not her?
Absolutely, but I'm not going back into conversations I had with her at that time. It's so long ago, it's 2019. And here is a woman who is now the subject of repeated questions, repeated invasions of her privacy. And we're ignoring the whole question of rehabilitation and our hypocrisy around that. And actually, we've seen more and more articles appear in the paper. The Irish Penal Reform Trust actually is talking about the importance of rehabilitation, recognising it, giving people a second chance, highlighting the awful barriers that continue to exist. This person has gone on to better things, and she still has to see her photo in a paper over and over. After, we have a court of law, we have a punishment system. She did what she served her prison sentence and so on. And I really would love to get to a point, one, where we talk, what does rehabilitation mean? And two, how did this story become a story?
Okay, one other thing I want to ask you.
If I could, because the allegations were very serious, all of which...
The conviction was very serious.
Absolutely. But all of the allegations made against me were very serious. All of them unfounded in relation to the allegations that were made. And just, I had no contact with the guards. I've said this over and over. It was an internal process within the houses of the commission. I've had all sorts of things said to me. I've said that I broke the rules in going in and out, which some of which have been retracted.
Okay, but in your generosity, perhaps might you have been a bit naive?
I've worked as a clinical psychologist and a barrister, and it goes to the heart of what rehabilitation is, actually. And we really need a discussion, an open and honest discussion on what rehabilitation...
Okay, and just to conclude, because we are a bit over time, but you mentioned about your career as a barrister, and that has come up in relation to the actions on behalf of banks seeking repossessions. And we've had explained to us, you know, the cab rank rule that barristers, unless they have good reasons, have to take the work that is offered to them. Mm. But what made you the type of barrister that solicitors wanted to hire to argue in favour of repossessions? Again, why do they choose you?
Again, we're framing the question. I did all sorts of work. Actually, in the end, I concentrated on family law because I was doing too much politics. But in any event, it's been...
No, sorry, solicitors have a choice as to who they approach, what barristers they want to offer work
absolutely.
To. Why did they decide Catherine Connolly would be a good barrister
to
fight the case? Well, no, did you not ask them why they chose you?
This is a complete misunderstanding of the role of a barrister and the briefs one receives. One receives different briefs and takes them on board. And
but solicitors pick barristers they want to work with.
Lots of things happen in relation to how you receive work. But the issue here is the amount of evictions as a direct result.
Did anyone lose their home as a result of a case that you took?
I cannot discuss that, and it's been pointed out over and over. I have a duty of confidentiality.
Well, it's the outcome of a court case.
The issue.
Were there any court cases that finished because of the arguments you made on behalf of the banks that led to somebody losing their home?
You're asking me to reveal different... You're asking me to go back on cases which I can't do, number one.
Surely you could remember whether anyone lost their home as a result of a case you prosecuted.
People lost their homes because of government policy. Government bailed out banks. Do you know how many evictions as a result of government policy? These are the questions that one needs to ask and have answered. The misery that was there, the upset, people forced to go abroad and so on. I'm fully familiar with that from my role as a barrister in different roles, representing lots of different sides. And really, we need to begin to look at the consequences of government policy in housing, in health, and in relation to where
all the things that you won't be able to argue if and when you become president. A couple of times earlier you mentioned almost when I'm president. So how confident are you now going into Friday's vote that you won't let the lead slip?
Your programme is called The Last Word, but I think the last word will be with the people of Ireland, and
Indeed. They
will decide who will be the next president.
Catherine Connolly, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.